ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Housekeeping often feels like stuff you have to do, not stuff you want to do. And making it a big focus of our lives can feel wrong or unwise, especially for women who might have fought for space in the world outside the home. But Helen Hayward argues there can be beauty and benefit in turning mindfully to the domestic sphere. She says the work of the home should take up more space in our pursuit of a good life. What are your thoughts on this? Have you found a way to deal with your relationship with the work of the home that is satisfying and maybe even creative? Helen Hayward has written a set of reflections on this idea called Home Work, Essays on Love and Housekeeping. Helen, great to have you on Life Matters today.
Thank you, Hilary. It's a terrifying introduction.
I think it's going to be a really interesting exploration of these ideas because everyone's
done
like
one of those. I feel like one of those things that you hang up at kids' birthday parties and then the kids whack the sweets out of it.
A piñata.
Yeah.
No, not at all. You're going to be an illustrative diagram on the wall and we will turn to you for interesting thoughts and then, you know, people could draw their own conclusions.
Yeah, yeah.
We also have a helper in the form of Dr. Erica Penny, who's a lecturer in clinical psychology at the University of Technology, Sydney. Erica, welcome to Life Matters.
Oh, thanks so much, Hilary. It's a really interesting topic and I'm looking forward to exploring it a bit too.
Yeah, I think everybody's got ideas about this because everyone's had to do the dishes at some point in their lives. Helen Hayward, you didn't start out life with this intense focus on domesticity, quite the opposite, in fact. How did you feel about the work of the home growing up?
Look, I dismissed it. I took it for granted. Third of four girls. I saw it as something... I didn't like to think of it in this way consciously, but I saw it as demeaning, and it was what education would free me and liberate me from.
That's interesting, isn't it, that this idea that, you know, our attentions were best focused elsewhere. What changed for you in that sense?
Life. Going through my 20s, I left Adelaide and went to London in my early 20s, I lived in a lot of share flats and then eventually ended up in my own studio. And it was living in my own studio flat, it was tiny, that taught me how to look after my own space. And ironically, or given my kind of upbringing, I found that quite enlightening and challenging and not at all demeaning. So I thought, well, maybe this isn't what I thought it was. It was the language itself that could do with a bit of exploring.
I love how you write about that invisible labour that went into creating lovely times and spaces in your childhood home. You know, there was food, there was clean laundry, there were pleasant rooms. But you write this really powerful section where you talk about a question that your mother asked you that really stopped you in your tracks. Tell us about that moment.
Oh, well, we're going to have to jump quite a few decades on. And my mother was in a nursing home after a long and productive life and feeling the lack of things to do in that creative housekeeping way that I'm trying to describe. And it was late at night, maybe 11. I was speaking on the phone from Melbourne. And towards the end of the call, she just slipped in. She said, "Helen, do you think I've wasted my life?" And I thought I'd heard her wrong. So I said, "Look, could you repeat that?" And she said with more insistence, "Helen, do you think I've wasted my life?" And then I rattled off my answer, you know, "You've done this, this and this. And, you know, it's terrific life that you've lived." And the question hung around for me. I went and sat on my back doorstep. And then in the months after that, she died, maybe 6 weeks after that. It stays with me to this day. And it's a kind of sounding bell for me. I think that kind of evocative question is there for all of us, no matter how we spend our days. How we spend our days is how we live our life. So, yeah. And I want to expand away from housework because I think housework is a really entropic, unhelpful way of going about thinking of how we look after ourselves and our home and the people we love most. And for me, housekeeping is it's much a larger animal, and it's the effect of all these things added together. So I'm just going to list them quickly. Mm. Cooking, celebrating, errands, finances, hobbies, gardening, laundry, maintenance, organizing, renovating, and maybe pets. And I've probably forgotten a couple. And it's the way that these coalesce in our mind, and when we're under pressure, they get stuck together and they induce a lot of stress. And with stress comes ambivalence, very mixed feelings. And those raw, I call them affect from my psychological background, which means they're not given language. They just lurk around in our minds and give us great joy and great pain. And my work, my exploration was to try and give language to those feelings, because I'm much more interested in our feelings at home rather than our thoughts about home.
Well, and one of the things I really loved about reading your book was that you did put that nuance in. You sorted through the giant list. I think page 15 has almost an entire page of listing tasks, but also defining what goes into creating a good home, a pleasant home, that space, that kind of environment. But, you divide those menial everyday tasks, the dishes, the laundry, the cleaning, and from the more creative things. So things that fall into that side of the ledger for me are things like preserving and baking and sewing and gardening and the things that can feel like you're making progress, I guess, as opposed to the things that have to be done every day just to keep your head above water. How do you balance those things, Helen? Because some of them just seem just like drudge work, and some of them seem like, you know, they can actually make a difference.
They press your buttons. They press our buttons. Of course they do. I came across the work of Mihai Csikszentmihalyi 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago. He's the man who came up with flow, the science of optimum experience. And he defined good not in a moralistic way, but as the creative overcoming of inertia. And whether we put it into words or not, inertia is always lurking about the home. There are things that we have to do that make us feel rubbish. And so my challenge was to think about those in a way that I was able to rise above them and not feel dragged down by them. And so I did introduce a bit of structure into my home life, and I have what I call my housekeeping hour, where like late afternoon around 5 or 6, I rush around and do everything I can, which in that large sense is domestic. And then at the end of the hour, and I'm going to red rag to the bull, I take my apron off. And I tell my unconscious, it's done, it's enough. I can get back to my more creative life now. And I find that when I'm not feeling resistant by framing it and motivating myself, I might even put the kitchen timer on. Those tasks don't feel half as bad. So I've realized that I'm quite prejudiced at home because of my upbringing, and my work has been to overcome those prejudices and just see those things as things that I do. And when I interviewed 60 people about their home life for an hour, 15 of them were men, and one in particular, he just said, look, that's part of my life. It's part of what I do. I don't see it as good or bad. So if we can take that evaluative lens off and just be in our experiences, which is what mindfulness is meant to be, then they're just things that we do, and they come at the same level as baking. That's... And also my other analogy is I teach yoga now, and I do flowers, quite big, two big vases every week. And I do it because it expresses something deep in me. My mother did it. and she doesn't know it, but she passed it on to me. Those flowers only work if I scrub out the vase. I put my hand in there and I use a scrubber because there's bacteria that grows. Because otherwise the flowers die quite quickly. So in my mind, the having Sacadis tears in the car, finding flowers or even weeds on the side of the road and jumping out of the car, putting them in the back of the car, putting them in water in a bucket when I get home, that is all part of this bigger cycle.
Mm.
And yep. I just choose a few things that express that.
The bigger cycle is a really interesting way to think about it, and the greater good, I suppose. I'm really interested in your thoughts on this as you listen to the discussion today with Helen Hayward and Dr. Erica Penny. Helen's explaining a bit about her work, her book Homework, Essays on Love and Housekeeping, because for a lot of us, those tasks do come freighted with a lot of emotional value either way, and social and political value as well. It's just a few texts that have come in. Dusting, how can you make that enjoyable? Well, you know, obviously it can be done. Another listener says, now that I'm retired, all the things Helen has just listed give me so much joy and satisfaction. I wonder how I found time to work. And Sophie says, on the, you know, what we bring from our childhood, last year a friend visited and commented on how tidy my small one-bedroom unit is. Sophie says, I know no other way of living and thought to myself, this is how all the homes I visited looked when I was growing up as a child of migrants. Pride in your home was very important. 0418 226 576 is our text message number. Dr. Erica Penny, let's talk about the relationship between our mental well-being and our homes just briefly before we get on to the kind of division of labour. How do our homes help our mental well-being?
Yeah, I mean, and it's so lovely listening to Helen's experience there because I think it highlights something about, there's something about the outcome, but there's something maybe even more important that I hear in the way Helen speaks about process. But if I start with the easier element of outcome, I mean, there's lots of research to say that on average, people will feel less stress and anxiety if the homes or offices that they work and spend their time in are less cluttered. Clutter and mess and disorganization are like these different distractions to our brain. We see, oh, I should be doing that. Oh, I should have done that. Oh, there's this other thing. Oh, now my phone's binging. And there's all this stuff just going on, particularly in our modern lives. And so there is research that most people will feel a sense of calm or less anxiety when things are slightly more in order, when there's a bit more ability to focus on one thing at a time. And I guess that then brings it to process. I mean, you know, I think what's really lovely, Helen, in the way you speak is you're not necessarily doing these things because the outcome is just, oh, good, then it will be in order and I might feel less stressed. There's actually something about the process of doing some of these simpler tasks in a really mindful way that can bring joy in of themselves. And it reminds me of much of the sort of third wave psychological research draws a lot on Buddhism, Zen Buddhism. And there's this Zen Buddhism quote that says, you know, before enlightenment, chop wood and carry water. And after enlightenment, chop wood and carry water. And I think it's because there are these, if we can ground ourselves into a bit more simplicity from the modern life, if we can bring ourselves back to there's purpose and meaning in any task we choose to bring our attention to, we can often feel a sense of relief, I think, from refocusing to things we do have some sense of control over, that we could say, well, what's just the next thing I have to do? What if I brought my full attention to this and I didn't kind of waste half my, you know, brain capacity thinking, where else could I be? Where should I be? Where's next? What's happening? You know, if I bring it to here, there's a calming and grounding sense in that.
Well, there can be, yes, but I'm thinking about that sense of control in a broader structural way too, because for a lot of women in particular, there's a lot of social and political judgment around our homes. And I think there's been one study that showed that women living in cluttered homes had much higher cortisol levels, but not the men in similar situations.
Yes.
So how do we deal with that unequal domestic labour issue, which is such a live issue in Australia now, and avoid that risk that just turning mindfully to our dishes will sustain that inequity?
Absolutely. And I think that's where we do have to think about, where does the purpose come from? If there is a sense of someone else telling you this is what your purpose is, I think that, that's, you know, going to continue to maintain this disequity. And of course, you know, historically, often keeping the home, keeping things in order, looking after children has historically been completed more by women than by men. And so I think that is going to have an ongoing influence. And yet I'm so encouraged by many of the conversations I'm now hearing between families saying, well, hang on, now maybe we work equal amounts, or maybe actually one partner gets more joy out of a certain task than the other partner. You know, I think it's about having these really open discussions. I mean, for myself, I work full-time and my husband is a full-time parent. And so we've had quite a different experience perhaps than the average family of me coming home and him actually quite mindfully sometimes saying, okay, look at what I've achieved, look what I did, look how I've made this lovely atmosphere in the home. So I'm quite encouraged by some of the conversations and the more that this is brought out into the light, saying, well, what is our purpose in this? Why are we doing it? Is there something we could do together that would help ground us? You know, could we garden together? Or if we both struggle with chores, why don't we spend Sunday actually making that time where we can connect and try and be mindful together about doing certain activities, rather than it having to be, there sort of being a lens of it having to be one gender or one person's role.
It's really interesting commentary coming through on our text line as we speak with Dr. Erica Penny and Helen Haywood on this idea of how to approach the work that needs to go into running a home, and sometimes can be a very enjoyable and satisfying and even creative way to do so. One says, I always feel that if I do something creative in each day, then I can feel satisfied with my day. It might be cooking a delicious meal or doing a little bit of painting or writing or gardening. And Helen, that's been a key plank of finding that joy in your time in the home, hasn't it? Because I was interested to see that there were times in your life when you were raising your family that you kind of came to the understanding that this stuff had to be done and was important for creating this beautiful, nurturing space. But you were worried at different times that it would result in you losing yourself. How did you find that balance between ultimately finding more of yourself, not being at that risk of losing parts of your identity?
Oh, these are such big, big, big questions. I think there's something I want to come back to, which is resentment, because I think that's the kind of lurking in the background of all of this. And it's a really powerful feeling that we experience in individual ways. One of the things I discovered when I interviewed so many people about their home lives is that we struggle with housekeeping the better that we were looked after as children. And that sounds paradoxical, but the better that we were looked after with children, this has nothing to do with socioeconomics, but the lack of resentment really that caregivers showed us in the physical looking after us as very small people when we were helpless. That then when we become adults, so-called adults, that flips and somehow we want that longing to be looked after, but we know it's unacceptable to expect that of someone else. No one is going to look after us no one will look after us in the way that in fantasy we were looked after as children. And this is sort of blowing up the conversation a lot, I know, but I think that this unacceptability that we have to look after ourselves it's manifest in our ambivalence and in our very mixed feelings. And for me, the way through was to forgive myself and to say, there's a quote from David White, when you forgive others, they may not notice, but you will heal. And this is what happened for me. Forgiveness is not something we do for others. It's a gift to ourselves. Forgiveness is accepting the apology you will never get. So when I realized that my kids were never going to look after me in the way that I looked after them, just as I never returned in kind all that my mother had done for me, I kind of made that much bigger so that I would give back to life itself in all the ways that came naturally to me, whether it's doing flowers in a yoga studio or having friends for dinner or making the gifts I give to others, to make it kind of much more a symbolic thing and not try and solve all the problems. One of the gifts of getting older is that you kind of get more interested in the problems and you stop reaching or grasping for solutions, for fixes. And you just say, oh, wow, that's pretty interesting. And that's not just me. This is human life that we're talking about. And this is what Life Matters is about, isn't it?
Yes. Well, as you say, they are big questions and they have kind of exploded the discussion far away from that idea of the ledger keeping of who does what. And that, I think, has been a fantastic thing. I wish I had time to read all the text messages that we have got, but I'm just going to finish on this one, which I think distills some of the things we've been speaking about with Helen and Erica today. James says, when I attended the School of Philosophy, we discussed watching the hands, observing all they do as we wash, clean, iron, etc. The observation generate curiosity and gratitude for me. Helen Hayward, Dr. Erica Penny, thanks so much for chatting on Life Matters today.
Thank you, Hilary.
Thank you.
Helen Hayward's the author of Home, Work, Essays on Love and Housekeeping. Very thoughtful essays, very beautifully written. And Dr. Erica Penny is a lecturer in clinical psychology at the University of Technology, Sydney.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music and more.